It is Friday, December the 30th. This is VOA's International Edition. Many thanks for joining us today. Coming up, new U.S. sanctions on Russia, and will President-elect Trump keep them in place?
But the real question is whether he's going to take action to basically lift whatever sanctions President Obama's administration has put in place.
Social media reaction to those sanctions. Also, the Israeli settlement issue. Looking back at 2016 and ahead to the new year, plus some New Year's music that many of us like. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. President Obama has imposed sanctions on Russian officials and intelligence services in retaliation for what the White House says is Russia's interference in the U.S. presidential election by hacking American political sites and email accounts. The U.S. State Department has also kicked out 35 Russian diplomats from its embassy in Washington and its consulate in San Francisco, giving them and their families 72 hours to leave the U.S. The diplomats were declared persona non grata for acting in what has been called a manner inconsistent with their diplomatic status. My colleague David Byrd speaks with our Moscow correspondent Daniel Scharf for the Russian response to the sanctions.
Well, the Kremlin has expressed regret at the new sanctions, called them illegal, said that they will destroy diplomatic relations between the U.S. and Russia, questioned whether they're even valid, given that President-elect Trump will be taking power in the White House here in just a matter of weeks. But at the same time, they've also promised an adequate response, they've called it, but implying very heavily that it will also be a reciprocal action, which could be both diplomatic and potentially involving counter-sanctions from Russia against U.S. officials or U.S. entities.
99 U.S. senators have called for some kind of investigation into alleged Russian tampering with the election, which included hacking of the Democratic National Committee headquarters, the releasing of some emails that were less than flattering for Hillary Clinton. Do you think that President-elect Donald Trump will be able to just stop that or overturn any kind of sanctions that have been imposed?
Well, it's going to be quite interesting. President-elect Trump, of course, has had some very positive comments to make about President Putin and about Russia. He's been fairly dismissive of the hacking allegations, including the latest ones, discussion of sanctions against Russia. So I would imagine that he will stick to that line as much as he can. But as we've seen coming out of Congress, there's been fairly strong bipartisan support for tough action against Russia, against the Kremlin, to send this signal. We even saw some comments from Republican leaders saying that this should have come even sooner from the Obama administration. So it's going to be interesting to see President-elect Donald Trump taking on some members of his own party if he chooses to do so. But the real question is whether he's going to take action to basically lift whatever sanctions President Obama's administration has put in place. And certainly that's what the Kremlin is hoping for. That's what Russia wants to see. And to a large degree, they're expecting that. Now, whether or not President-elect Donald Trump can actually make that happen once he takes office, when you have, a fairly strong bipartisan support in Congress for sanctions, it'll be very interesting to see how that relationship plays out.
That is VOA Moscow correspondent Daniel Scharf speaking with International Edition's David Byrd. Now it's time to look at the social media buzz surrounding the Russia sanctions. International Edition's Michael Lippin is here. Hey, Michael, what are the trending phrases right now on all of this on Twitter?
Well, Steve, the two biggest trends on this topic today are the phrase 35 Russian, as in the 35 Russians being expelled by the U.S., and also the phrase ejecting operatives, as in the U.S. ejecting Russian operatives from the country. Now, some people have been tweeting links to a New York Times story that says the U.S. sanctions would amount to the strongest American response ever taken to a state-sponsored cyber attack. You know, Obama's critics are not impressed by this. Twitter user @MetalBones59 writes, "Obama is ejecting operatives for alleged Russian hacking, but it was okay for him to tap German Chancellor Angela Merkel's cell phone." Now, that user is referring to a 2013 report by German news outlet Der Spiegel, which said U.S. National Security Agency documents leaked by former NSA contractor Edward Snowden showed that it had hacked into Merkel's cell phone. The White House said at the time that it was not spying on Merkel at present, nor would it in future, but it refused to say whether it had done in the past, which was interpreted by some as a U.S. admission of guilt. Now, critics of the U.S. President-elect Donald Trump are also weighing in. @SusanJ357 says, "Ejecting operatives should mean the presidential election outcome of November 8, 2016 is not credible, and therefore neither is Trump."
Well, you know, it begs the question, how is Russia reacting to the sanctions on, you know, their various social media platforms?
Well, Steve, you know, the Russian embassy in London is getting attention for tweeting out a note saying, "President Obama expels 35 Russian diplomats in Cold War deja vu. Everybody, including American people, will be glad to see the last of this hapless administration." And to top off that message, the embassy also attached a picture of a duck with the word lame over it. As some of our listeners may know, a lame duck is a pejorative expression for a political leader on his or her way out of office without much ability to do anything. Although Obama, in this case, clearly has taken some action against Russia. And that tweet from the Russian embassy got a snarky reply from Diana Crandall, a social media manager for the New York Daily News site. She just typed, "? Did someone's teenager just hack the Russian embassy Twitter account? What grade are you in?" The Russian embassy in the U.S. also has been tweeting, quoting Putin spokesman Dmitry Peskov as saying, "There is no doubt that Russia's adequate and mirrored response will make Washington officials feel very uncomfortable as well." And just another note to add that the anti-secrecy group WikiLeaks also is weighing in. It's pointing out in several tweets that the Obama administration's new revelations about alleged Russian hacking do not mention the group at all. Now, as you may know, WikiLeaks faced repeated accusations from its American critics that the hacked Democratic Party emails that it published during the election campaign came from Russian government sources. Steve?
Hey, listen, many thanks to you, Michael. International Edition's Michael Libin. By the way, you can find Michael on Twitter and follow him there at @Michael_Lippin. I'm there as well at VOA Norman. And our program, International Edition, can be found on Twitter at @VOA_IE. Among the other stories we're following on VOA, a body found in Rio de Janeiro believed to be Greek ambassador. Boko Haram's leader says the group is safe and not crushed. Plus, India's finance minister calling currency ban a success. His critics are disagreeing. Those stories, plus a lot more, at our website, voanews.com, and as always, on the VOA mobile app. Outgoing U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has unveiled his vision for a possible lasting solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. In an hour-long speech, Mr. Kerry warned that a two-state solution is a serious jeopardy and that a one-state is not in Israel's best interest. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu promptly condemned Secretary Kerry's speech, saying it was skewed in favor of the Palestinians. And President-elect here in the U.S., Donald Trump, has promised staunch support for Israel. We get the story now from VOA's Ladit Zahok.
Kerry said those supporting the expansion of Israel's settlements in the West Bank and East Jerusalem are now defining the future of Israel.
They believe in one state, Greater Israel. In fact, one prominent minister who heads a pro-settler party declared just after the U.S. election, and I quote, The era of the two-state solution is over.
During his re-election campaign in 2015, Netanyahu vowed that no Palestinian state would be established under his watch. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump has promised his staunch support for Israel once he takes office. Kerry argued that a greater Israel would never be at peace.
There are a similar number of Jews and Palestinians living between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea. They have a choice. They can choose to live together in one state, or they can separate into two states. But here is a fundamental reality. If the choice is one state, Israel can either be Jewish or democratic. It cannot be both.
Kerry said the United States has given more support to Israel than any other country, and that both must remain true to their stated democratic values.
We cannot properly defend and protect Israel if we allow a viable two-state solution to be destroyed before our own eyes.
The Israeli Prime Minister promptly responded that Kerry's speech was biased.
What he did was to spend most of his speech blaming Israel for the lack of peace by passionately condemning a policy of enabling Jews to live in their historic homeland and in their eternal capital, Jerusalem.
The two-state solution envisions Jerusalem as the capital of both Israel and a future Palestinian state. A United Nations resolution condemns Israeli construction in East Jerusalem, which would be the Palestinian capital. Netanyahu said Israel will resolve outstanding differences with the Palestinians through direct negotiations. Zlatica Hoc, VOA News, Washington.
Reports from Syria say violent clashes broke out less than 2 hours after the start of a nationwide ceasefire that began at midnight today local time. That deal includes the Syrian government and several rebel groups, but not certain Islamist groups. That arrangement follows suit with previous halts in fighting, as we hear now from Edward Uranian in our Middle East Bureau.
A Syrian army statement read on state TV indicated that a ceasefire would not include militant groups like Islamic State or Jabhat al-Nusra. Both Russia and Turkey have also agreed to hold peace negotiations in February between the Syrian government and opposition groups in the Kazakh capital, Astana. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov indicated that the U.S. is welcome to join the talks after President-elect Donald Trump takes office on January 20th. Former Syrian Information Minister Mehdi Daqlala told state TV that it appeared that accepting the long-discussed truce was in the government's interest. He says that the important thing is that the positives outweigh the negatives in such a truce deal, because there is always the danger that the rebel militias take advantage of the ceasefire to rearm and resupply. He insists that the agreement is positive because it allows the government and its allies to continue targeting Islamic State and the Jabhat al-Nusra. Retired Syrian General Haitham Hassoun told state TV that it was imperative that Moscow and Ankara prevent terrorists from using the ceasefire to flee the country. He says that Turkish and Russian observers will need to monitor the borders in order to prevent foreign fighters and terrorists from trying to escape from Syria and return to their home countries, including Egypt and Tunisia. Russia, Egypt, and Tunisia have expressed concern over what to do if Islamic militants fighting in Syria return home. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
And in Washington, I'm Steve Norman. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA News is there. VOA. Around the clock, listen to VOA newscasts on the top of each hour, along with our detailed news shows and analysis.
VOA News. We're online at voanews.com.
At voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.
Jazz America. This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Associated Press chose the outcome of the November 8th U.S. election as its top story of 2016, while Time magazine selected Donald Trump, winner of that election, as their person of the year. Jonathan Adelman, a professor at the University of Denver, tells my colleague Victor Beatty the second big story of 2016 was the rise of Russia, followed by Europe's ongoing migrant crisis. Adelman explaining now why the U.S. election outcome was so extraordinary to make it the top story of the year.
First of all, nobody thought he had the slightest chance, and that here was somebody who was going on 70, who had never run for political office, who had been a liberal Democrat at one point in his career, and now suddenly was going to be a Republican. And he was tweeting to 16 million people, and everybody thought he couldn't make it. But I think there's a second side to this, that once in power, which he will be shortly, there's no question that he is going to rule this country in a very different way than his predecessors. This is such an untraditional leader. We are sitting here, and I can't even tell you, even though, like everyone else, I've studied this, exactly what he's going to do, just kind of vaguely. And whether he will succeed, that is totally unclear.
Where did you see Russia's rise begin?
Russia's rise really began in 2008, when the Russians, at the time of the Olympics, took advantage of that and invaded Georgia, or Gruzia in Russian, and they kept as part a new part of Russia, Abkhazia, which had been Joseph Stalin's summer home, and southern Ossetia, which is matched by northern Ossetia in Russia. Since then, this has accelerated in the last few years, since 2014, taking Crimea and then taking the left bank of Ukraine, and now this great victory in Syria.
All right, you picked a migration crisis. It obviously has a ripple effect, the Brexit election referendum being one of them.
What we see is that this migration crisis has kind of piggybacked on a number of other issues, such as nationalism and a feeling that their countries were being ignored. And this doesn't come from the weak, smaller countries in Eastern Europe. They're clear gainers by billions of dollars. It's coming from England, from France, even from Italy, but not yet and possibly never from Germany, partly because of the war history.
What should we look for in 2017?
I think we're going to see more of the same. We're going to see that the French are going to have an election. Marine Le Pen will certainly make it as to be number two. And that's something which nobody ever foresaw a couple of years ago. She'll probably lose, but even if she runs well, this sends some very serious messages.
Meanwhile, global intelligence company Stratfor, in its 2017 forecast, expects the U.S., the lone superpower, to continue a retrenchment from world affairs under Donald Trump, begun by his predecessor Barack Obama. In forecast, 2017 to be a year of rising nationalism around the world, as we've just heard from Jonathan Adelman, especially in Europe, where the future of the European Union is in doubt with crucial elections in France and Germany and possibly Italy. Stratfor says Europe's problems present Russia with a golden opportunity as it seeks to influence its borderlands while trying to achieve an easing of sanctions. Tomorrow is New Year's Eve, and one of the biggest celebrations worldwide takes place in New York City's Times Square. This year, in the wake of the terrorist attacks in Nice, France, and Berlin, Germany, extra security is being deployed to make sure the celebrations are safe. New York Mayor Bill de Blasio says more than 1 million people are expected to crowd into Times Square to welcome in 2017.
New Year's Eve. We expect, as per usual, over 1 million people. I'm not quite sure why 1 million people want to stand in the freezing cold for long, long periods of time, but they do, and we'll be ready for them.
Yeah, I've been out there in the freezing cold once or twice. Highlight of Saturday night celebrations is the dropping of a 3.5-meter-wide crystal ball with themes, many of them including this year, Gifts of Kindness. This is VOA.
This is BizBeat.
Wild animals roam freely in Nairobi's National Park. Not far away are construction workers building a Chinese-designed and financially-backed rail system connecting Mombasa to Kenya. But a 6-kilometer rail bridge is planned to slice right through the famous park to accommodate trade, tourism, and economic growth. Christian Odiambo is a structural engineer for Kenya Railway Cooperation.
Giraffe can pass through very, very comfortably without causing any obstruction to their movements.
Conservationist like Akshay Vishwanath says Nairobi National Park is a national park for a reason.
You know, protected for a certain land use, and that's conservation and habitat for wildlife and biodiversity. So there's no reason why any infrastructure or anything should go through it, under it, or over it.
Construction's been halted for now thanks to a Kenyan court order to await another impact assessment, but Kenya's president does favor the rail project. For VOA's BizBeat, I'm Philip Alexio.
This is VOA's International Edition. Thanks for being with us today. You know, we're about to say goodbye to 2016, and we thought it might be nice right now to hear some of the music from the traditional to the avant-garde that many of us like to listen to this time of year.
On New Year's Eve,
yeah.
I do believe. On New
And not a second later, she stay in the mix like a crossfader. It's about to go down, no elevator. Live for the moment, love in the air. She got me feeling like I don't wanna be a player. Real talk, so I don't wanna be unfair. Now watch the apple drop and celebrate the year. Yeah, I see you shining way from over there. And all the
Snoop Dogg is an American rapper and actor, and he's been a mainstay on the music scene for 25 years. Also heard on this cut of Snoop's New Year's Eve is singer-songwriter Marty James.
Maybe you and me,
you and me,
we can live,
and we can live forever,
forever,
forever and a day.
Going a little more traditional with Frank Lesser's What Are You Doing New Year's Eve, which hit the top of the charts for the group The Orioles in 1949, contemporary artist A.J. Raphael and Tori Kelly do the honors.
Hey.
So, like, what are you doing for New Year's and stuff?
Actually, I don't really know yet. What about you?
Oh, yeah, I don't really know what I'm doing yet either.
Well, I just kind of wanted to ask. Maybe it's much too early in the game. But I thought I'd ask you just the same. What are you doing New Year's Eve?
Wonder whose arms will hold you good and tight when it's exactly 12 o'clock at night. Welcoming in the
rocker Bruce Springsteen doing the countdown to New Year's in 2009, and other rockers like the Eagles and U2 wrote original songs about New Year's.
Last night I was a happy man, but the way I feel right now, it's gonna be a
And then there's nothing like the New Year's favorite Auld Lang Syne, credited to the works of Scotland's poet Robert Burns, and sung here by American superstars of rhythm and blues Aretha Franklin and Billy Preston on Billy's 1987 TV show from Detroit.
acquaintance be forgot and days of old days I oh days I my dear oh days I we'll drink a cup of kindness yet
You know, the next time we get together for International Edition here on The Voice of America, it will be the new year. So between now and then, we hope that you'll be safe and certainly enjoy. For our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Mark Ferguson, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. Happy New Year, everybody.
Thank you, Aretha.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
When appropriate and in accordance with U.S. law, the United States identifies certain individuals as crucial to the operation of terrorist organizations. Most often, these are top leaders, or they help finance terrorist organizations. When such an individual is identified, the U.S. government places that person's name on the specially designated nationals list. His assets within U.S. reach are immediately frozen, and he is locked out of the global financial network. No U.S. citizen or company may conduct business with a designated individual. Such is the case of Victor Quispe Palomino, Jorge Quispe Palomino, and Tarsela Loya Vilches, three top leaders of Peruvian-based foreign terrorist organization and specially designated global terrorist group, Shining Path. Shining Path, which has been engaged in terrorism since 1980, is a violent offshoot of the Communist Party of Peru. Its stated intent is to violently overthrow the country's long-standing democracy and replace it with a Maoist-style dictatorship. It employs intimidation, assassination, and particularly brutal and murderous attacks on civilians to achieve its aims. These terrorists have massacred entire villages. This includes, among others, Lucanamarca, where 69 people were massacred in 1983, and the subsequent Wahlo massacre that killed 47. Shining Path finances itself through the cocaine trade. It taxes the cultivation, processing, and transit of cocaine. It also provides transport and armed security to narcotics trafficking organizations, moving large cocaine loads through and out of south-central Peru. Brothers Victor and Jorge Quispe Palomino currently lead the Shining Path group. Victor Quispe Palomino has admitted to participating in the Lucanamarca massacre, while his brother Jorge has also participated in and directed Shining Path attacks that resulted in numerous deaths. Tarsela Loya Vilches is in charge of the military training and ideological indoctrination of children. She is known to have trained new Shining Path members, often child soldiers, to serve as reinforcements in the group's terrorist operations. For these and other reasons, all three have been designated by the U.S. Department of State as specially designated global terrorists under Executive Order 13224. Since 1980, Peruvians have strongly rejected the Shining Path, and what is left of the organization has evolved into little more than a violent, criminal, narco-terrorist gang. By now designating its remaining leadership, the United States hopes to disrupt the group's ability to continue its nefarious activities.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
is 4.